You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
Dave Hodges is as mad as hell, and he's not gonna take it anymore.
I'd like to help you, don't you? Yes, I really, really would, but the din in my head, it's too much and it's no good. I'm standing in a window tunnel, shouting through the roar, and I'd like to give the information, asking for me. But blood makes noise. There's a ringing in my ear, blood makes noise. And I can't really hear you in the thickening of fear.
Common sense is not so common. This is the Common Sense Show with Dave Hodges.
Good Sunday evening, everybody, and welcome to another exciting edition of the Common Sense Show, where we are freeing America one enslaved mind at a time. I am Dave Hodges, your host, and riding shotgun with me for this evening is Katie Whalen, and Katie will be bringing us the health report in the beginning of the third hour. At the end of her segment, we're going to be welcoming on an old familiar friend, Paul Martin. And we have such a shocking revelation that's going on at a ranch in eastern Colorado. You're not going to want to miss this. It has to do with, let's just put it this way. I'm going to keep this as the mystery of the show. But we're going to produce it tomorrow. We're going to put it out there on the in print. We're going to talk about what's going on, at least what we know. I'm also going to be revealing what I have learned about Jade Helm plans for martial law. And I've got a copy of a working paper. No, it's not a final document, but it comes pretty close to what you would expect. Before we jump into the show, just a couple of quick announcements. Last week, you might remember that I mentioned that my good friend and I, Jim White, started a new show, 10 minutes, six stories, top of the day, under 10 minutes. And it's up on the website at thecommonsenseshow.com. Don't go listen to it now. Wait until after the show. And we're going to produce one a day. It's received pretty favorable reviews. So that's Red List News. We actually have a website for that, redlistnews.com. Also, don't Google anymore. Yes, that's right. You heard me. Stop Googling. Our good friend Michael Adams from naturalnews.com, he has produced a new search engine, and it is fantastic. I go to it every day now. It's called goodgopher.com. Goodgopher, G-O-P-H-E-R, goodgopher.com. Stay away from Google and the NSA. Well, our guest for the first 2 hours is someone who I've interviewed a couple of times in the past, and he's always a terrific interview. He's a great researcher, and I want to underline great. And we're going to be talking about Planet X. And I won't say I'm skeptical. I'm going to say I am mildly ignorant. And we're going to let our guest, Bob Fletcher, educate me and you as we go through these first 2 hours about the nature of Planet X. Is it real? And does it pose any threat? And I'm sure none of you need any introduction to Bob Fletcher, as he is one of the great researchers of our time, which really is the only reason why I'm covering this subject, because I trust Bob Fletcher. Bob, thanks for joining us on this Sunday evening. And I'm really looking forward to this interview. And I know our health reporter, Katie Whalen, she sent me a text earlier in the week. And she goes, oh, Dave, I can't wait for Bob to come on. And I first wanted to mention that you were supposed to be on back in July, but bad things happened. I mean, you had to be evacuated because of a fire. So I know my listening audience was concerned when you had to cancel. So let's talk about what happened there and just make sure everything is okay.
Okay. Well, it's my pleasure to be back on again. Boy, there's nothing I personally hate to do but to call somebody and say, hey, something has happened and I can't make the show when we have previously advertised and let people know that I was going to be on, and then all of a sudden, last minute, disappear. Several times I've stepped in and replaced other people that had problems where they had to do a last minute vanishing act, so
Bob,
to speak, for one reason.
That's completely understandable. We were concerned about your welfare and safety.
I greatly appreciate that, and we had an amazing number of people from around the entire globe that were concerned about what had happened, what took place, et cetera. To kind of abbreviate that so we don't take too much time on it, we live up in Idaho here. We have we are literally like in the middle, if you will. The town we live in is a very small town of only 200 people, and we live totally surrounded by national federal parks that are just filled with nothing but 100 and 200-year-old pine trees. And we have had, of course, the whole, like the rest of the country, extremely dry weather up here. We've been on like a red alert almost the entire last 6 months, so to speak. It seems like it's been that long. But since actually a month before summer even arrived, we were having extraordinary out of the unusual weather, out of the ordinary. And it's been like a tinderbox up here. And then, of course, as you know, it started actually quite several months back, as I said, where everybody in the Northwest is burning. Washington, Oregon, and Idaho have burned huge forest fires all around. And we had this one broke out up here, and it was an accident. It was It was apparently a couple of guys screwed up, and their campfire got away from them. It's what it appeared to be, the first one. And it just, it like 1,200 to 1,500 acres. Now, so we were, I literally was like the third person that saw it, as I called in the fire department here locally, it was, we overlooked the lake, and the lake, we had vanished. You couldn't see it from the smoke. And so, we called in right away, and, one thing led to another, but it turned out to be really huge. It, about, 1,700 acres altogether. It had burned down to the point where it was literally, the closest point was 1 mile to our town. And, we had to, evacuate the house. And we were gone for 4 or 5 days. We had to go 30 miles to find a room, as a matter of fact, because also, as it happens, the forest fire fighting, some of the guys fighting the fires and the specialists that they brought in, which, by the way, is they've been using huge the Chinook helicopters and airplanes, the regular like the size of a 727 or C-130, bringing in water, dumping the water. They had 500 to 700 people up here, specialists. They set up entire encampments a couple miles from my home. Anyhow, it was pretty spooky. And even though we had, coincidentally, my wife had a bad feeling about this season, she had put together what they refer to as boogie bags. We had packed up an initial handful of things that we thought we might need if we ever had to get out this year. That's how ominous it was. And we ended up, nonetheless, we got out. We took the necessities and had them ready and got on out of here. And unfortunately, it's extremely emotionally disruptive because what happens, we were like on the edge as to whether the condition here was that if the wind changed from a northerly to a southern direction, we would have lost the whole town of 200 homes here. And that was the way it was. And it was like every day. You know, you wake up and you just go right away to the local information center, the news, to find out did we lose the house over the night or do we still have one? It's really crummy, you know. So anyhow, everybody, when you watch those things, you have to really, you know, when you see them on the news and other locations, you got to really feel for those people that have been run out of their homes and you know, and pray for them and God bless them if. It's either like it's like flipping a coin. You either got a home or you don't. And, you know, everything you've done. In my case, I could have lost hard copy on thousands of extremely important documents, stuff that originally on my investigations had come out of the White House. I was really worried. I have copies, of course, but it's not quite the same as having the original documentation. Now, for the people that don't know who I am, know a little bit about me or whatever don't realize what happened in terms of how I got into looking into Planet X. I'm not an astronomer. That has not been a hobby or anything like that for me. I've been an investigator. I say luckily just because you can be an investigator or a journalist or something like that. But in my case, I was personally involved with extraordinary criminal activity that was not of my own doing, but with a company that I merged many years ago with a fella that appeared to be a legitimate business operation, when in fact he was, and his organization, which was really rather large, his organization supplied weapons for the Central Intelligence and for the intelligence services and for those parts of the Defense Department that carry out all these covert wars, all what I refer to the little wars all the time. And they are financially unbelievably profitable for the people that are involved. And this character merged my business with his business, and I thought it was straight up and down legitimate operation. Found out that under my nose and with my own company that I had worked so hard to develop and create had been turned into a supply center for the Central Intelligence directly under Ronald Reagan and George Bush's presidencies. So that was what got my eyes open for the first time, so to speak. I became a federal witness. I was a federal witness in a handful of major congressional and Senate inquiries, all of which, by the way, are complete baloney garbage. They're a joke. Every time somebody says, oh, we've gotten, this is going to have a congressional inquiry, the chances of anything coming of any of those is like 100 to 1. It's just garbage and baloney. And again, I'd been involved with them. Congressman Sonny Bono, worked with him for almost a year, about 9 months. We were putting together a huge congressional investigation relative to drug smuggling directly connected into the White House, period. There's no other way to dance around it. It's what it was. The information I supplied his offices with on a regular basis had really freaked him out, had upset Sonny. And, of course, the worst part of it is that it ended up getting him killed because he was murdered on the ski slopes, dragged up against a tree to make it look like he had run into the tree and died in a ski accident. And the truth is he was killed to prevent the launching of this particular investigation. And in that investigation, by the way, we had subpoena powers had been set up, which is not the norm. That doesn't happen in congressional inquiries very often, which basically that means that people are going to have to answer the questions or they can be put in jail until they decide to talk. So normally, obviously, for obvious reasons, that's not very often the situation in congressional inquiries. So I feel very bad about the Sonny situation. I literally feel that the material that I had supplied him with was probably what got, let's say, the straw that broke the camel's back and had him killed up on the ski slopes. They had called me from Washington literally 10 days prior to Sonny's death, and they had notified me, they called me up, and they said, I was in California at the time. They said, Bob, we're ready to go with this inquiry, and 10 or 15 days from January the 1st, which would have been the time that they were on going on Christmas holidays. So they called me in the middle of December. They said, within a couple of weeks of the return, probably would have been January 15th or something like that, of Sonny and everybody coming back from the holidays, we're going to open the inquiries. If you're available to come, get everything in order so you can come out and testify. And I was ready to go, and I was ecstatic because this would have brought people to their knees, and this is obviously the reason why they had to eliminate Sonny. 10 days after I spoke with him on telephone, he was dead, and that was the end of it. So
I remember when I interviewed you about this several years ago that you implicated his wife in having a role.
If I said that poorly,
go ahead and correct the verdict.
Yeah, no, that's not necessary. I would think that she knew more about it. They all did because nobody wanted to pursue it, on the back end. I did do an investigation, which is available on a DVD if people are interested. We finally got the autopsy and went over it and all that. There's no question as to what happened. And the big point, part of why there was no cooperation on her side was that they were already apparently heading for a divorce. People didn't know that. I worked after his death. I was working with his mother, his mother's lawyers, and we just unable to get any good cooperation on it. And it was an assassination just like all the ones that were involved with the Kennedy thing, with the Kennedy murders, et cetera. And it was the same kind of a situation where they had complete capabilities to cut off these inquiries and shut them down. I just mentioned that, kind of got off on this here a little bit unnecessarily, but just wanted to mention that to my work for 30 years, and I have done it full-time, chasing the bums I've been involved with. I wanted to point out just that I'm not like a reporter or some guy that just goes out and reads magazines and comes up with inquiries. I've been directly involved with these. I have been a federal witness in several cases, racketeering case for $20 million that was filed against all the people in the Iran-Contra mess. I was involved with that as a witness. I was a witness for the congressional inquiries looking into the old October surprise. That was the fraudulent takeover, the winning of the presidency when George Bush and Reagan, or reverse Reagan and Bush, ran against Jimmy Carter and cut an illegal act behind everybody's back that involved millions, actually almost $1 billion, with the Iranians in order to win that election. I was involved with that directly, et cetera, et cetera. Now, the point is, I never would in a million years randomly get involved with looking into Planet X. All right, it wasn't on my radar. It was something like, actually, it was not on anybody's radar because it can't be seen. It's an infrared non-illuminating body out there that's very difficult to find. So, but what happened was, again, this is about, now we go back to 3 years, approximately 3 years ago. What happened was I was looking into, actually had a couple people that asked me about it and said, hey, you need to look into, and can you assist us in looking into what happens to all of the money that's been disappearing? The money is gone from a variety of directions. Huge amounts of money are disappearing, and it is illogical. And I was aware of it and some of the problems. And for one thing, they said one thing that they're talking about is the gold. The gold in Fort Knox is all gone. Nobody can find out about the gold. And a lot of people don't realize, but the gold depository of Fort Knox holds thousands of tons of gold that belongs to other nations. Many, many nations around the globe have actually physically brought in and deposited tons of gold in our Fort Knox depository, which is under, of course, the Federal Reserve. The Federal Reserve does the oversight on it, and the Federal Reserve, as I hope everyone knows by now, has nothing to do with the United States government, other than directing and overseeing how much money is printed, how much is manufactured, what the interest rates are going to be around the entire globe, and because as America goes, so goes our, the rest of the nations, in terms of interest. The money that international banks receive when they need it, as in advances or anything on that at that level, that goes through the Federal Reserve, and the money is dispersed to banks throughout Europe, et cetera, et cetera. Anyhow, but it's a private enterprise. That's the point. It has nothing to do with the government here. And a senator and a congressman and the vice president of the United States has no right, because it's the way it's set up, they have no right to even ask for an audit. Now, that's got to scare the pudding out of everybody, and most people just don't even realize that unless you've heard it on a good talk radio like this program is. And a lot of people don't realize that there's no physical control of the gold at Fort Knox. So what had happened was when the money crashed in 2008, 2010, globally, many of the international banks and foreign banks came to the Federal Reserve and said, we have to have an audit. We want to draw some of our gold bullion that is on deposit in physical gold. We're going to have to bring it back to Germany, Sweden, France, and some of these other country banks. And the one particular one that came forward was Germany as the first one. It ended up being about six or eight nations that wanted to drag some of their money out, bring the gold out. They were told to go away and come back in about 7 years.
I remember that. We're going to have to hold it right there. We're going into break, Bob. But I had that discussion with Karen Hudis on my show, and we'll jump into this when we come back. Stay tuned, everybody. We'll be back with Bob Fletcher and Planet X in just a moment. Hey, just a quick reminder of what I mentioned at the top of the hour about Red List News. Jim White and I are producing and publishing the six top news story every day, and you can go to thecommonsenseshow.com and read all about it. And a quick reminder, too, about Mike Adams' new search engine, goodgopher.com. That's goodgopher.com. And I want to tell you about my friend Steve Quayle. Things are about to get tough, really tough. I just read today that a lot of economists are looking for a 30% devaluation of the dollar within the next 45 days. I don't know if that's going to happen, but we're not going to continue on the same path we're on, that's for sure. And you need to get prepared financially. And my good friend Steve Quayle from Renaissance Precious Metals wants to help you get prepared. And he's got a way to help you form a hedge against inflation or really just outright confiscation of your resources. Renaissance Precious Metals, Steve Quayle, call him tomorrow, 406-586-4842. Again, that's 406-586-4842. I'm going to return to Bob Fletcher, and he brought up an interesting point as we went into the break. And what Bob was saying was the Federal Reserve really wasn't forthcoming about what happened to the gold in Fort Knox. And a few years ago, I had Karen Hudis on a couple of times, and she used to be an attorney with the World Bank, and she said the same thing, and that Germany was furious because they could not get their gold that they knew that we were holding on to. So, Bob, let's go ahead and pick it up right there.
Right, and so the Germans, and as a matter of fact, I'm going to give you want to get a good handle on why they were so upset. Germany had 1,500 tons of gold in our Federal Reserve, in the Fort Knox Bank, okay, in the vaults of Fort Knox. And even think about that for a second. Okay, we're not talking $1.95 here. We're really talking serious money. Gold reached the 11, 12, and 1400 an ounce position. I have no idea where it is today, but nonetheless, it's still way, way up. It's just mind-boggling to imagine having 1500 tons and having the people that are holding your money tell you they now this was 2013. They were told to come back in 2020 and not given any real good reason, and they said, well, they may be able to give them some kind of an audit on the, you know, the figures value and all the rest of that earlier, but the truth was they were not getting any cooperation. Then, of course, there were a couple of other nations like them that came forward and wanted money, you know, wanted their own money. They wanted to go in. It's like you going in and them telling you that their $2,000 that you got in your savings account, you can't have it, you know, at your local bank. It's exactly the same, except the difference is obviously in most cases not too many people have 1,000 tons of gold in a bank and being told to go away. But that was a reality. And then on that, and by the way, it was Ron Paul that had stepped forward as a senatorial representative and said he wanted to insist that the American people get a new audit on exactly how much is in there to make sure that it was all still in there, and an audit that would all indicate how much money had been borrowed against it, and was the gold in there, and that, but actually owned by somebody else because previous administration had spun it off or lent it out or given it away for assistance or something of that sort. The bottom line was he asked also for an audit. They told him to go away. It's none of his business. He has no right to look at it, and don't bother us anymore. And there was a couple other congressmen and senators that did the same thing. And then you talk about the International Monetary Fund. The fellow that ran that and headed that off, he came over, flew over, about this is maybe 2 years ago at this point in time. He came over in the middle of this turmoil, and he said that the International Monetary Fund, they want an audit because they have a huge amount of it on deposit, and they wanted to see it, and they wanted an audit. And he was told the same thing. He was told, go away, come back in about 5 or 10 years, all right, with no explanation. He said, and he warned them. Now, these guys that run the Federal Reserve are really the honchos with probably egos that we couldn't even imagine. And how dare anybody tell them or question their veracity? So he really, I can't think of this fellow's name, but he's a Frenchman or Swissman from Switzerland or someplace over there, and it was the head of the International Monetary Fund, which is a group of bankers in Europe, basically. Okay, so they tell him to go away, take a hike. So he said, now he was in New York. He said, now I'll tell you what, I'm going to leave, but I'm coming back within 30 days. I'm putting in a formal request from the International Monetary Fund and Foundation, and we are going to go to the United Nations. And we're going to go on the floor of the United Nations, and we are going to force you to give us all a proper audit because we no longer believe the gold is there, period. And they said, you can go to the UN if you want to. We're not going to help you, and, you know, go back home to France or where it was he'd come from. By the way, with his own, he had his own jet. He has an airliner like Trump. He has a big airline of his own, and he goes in New York City, gets on his plane, and they physically flagged his plane down, stopped it, interrupted the departure, pulled him off with the police department from New York City, yanked this guy off of the plane, put him in handcuffs, dragged him away, put him in jail, and charged him with sexually pursuing in an illegal manner sexual favors with the maid.
Yeah, I remember this.
That had cleaned up his room at the Waldorf Astoria, or wherever it was he was staying, at $1,400 a night room, a billionaire, and he's yanked off of the plane and charged with chasing some housekeeping maid around the around. You know, first off, you know, I don't know the guy at all, there's always a possibility, but that was absolutely trumped up charges. The poor guy here is, I mean, this guy was, he was about to be president of, you know, the next president of wherever he was from. Again, I apologize for forgetting that. But the bottom line is, you know, this guy, multi-billionaire, is not going to chase the maid that cleans his house, cleans up his room at the Waldorf Astoria for sexual favors. I just don't find that likely. But see, the trick with this was that they said that they were going to charge him with it. He would never be allowed back to the United States again. It would be a felony, charge. They would put him in jail. He'd have to go through all the rest of that. And they said, unless you get on your plane and get out of here and never bother us again about the gold.
Yeah, that was, you're actually talking about Dominique Strauss-Kahn.
That's
and
correct.
And this event happened in May of 2011.
Yep. Unbelievable. Threw him out of the country with this. Anyhow. So, now, you put this together with another whole barrage, because I don't have time to get into all of it, a whole mixture of vanishing money, including Donald Rumsfeld coming forward from the Defense Department and announcing on the floor of the Congress, and by the way, the time that he did it was important. It was the day before 9/11. The day before the 9/11 event, Donald Rumsfeld came forward and said they can't find $2.3 trillion from the Defense Department budget, and that was progressive funds going back many years, but apparently that was the total that had vanished. Now, we're not talking with a B, we're talking 2.3 trillion with a T. And so you add that together with the gold, not the gold's not there. That's why they don't show it to anybody. It does not any longer exist. So I started at that point, when I just adding it all up, I said, wait a minute. I was used to chasing and in doing investigations as it related to $1 million here, $2 million there, $4 million here, $8 million there, where senators or congressmen or whatever we had were involved with the fraudulent activities or defense contractors paying people off under the table and those types of things that amounted to quite often people maybe building a new chalet for themselves in Tahiti to be when they're on their vacation, you know, the dipping into the average guy's tax money that he's paid in, we think is being expended for other things. And a lot of those were typical inquiries or overlaps or the drug smuggling I was talking about or smuggling of weapons and guns and exchange, trading it out for drugs and things of that sort. That I was used to. But when you realize there's no way under the sun that you can money launder, hide, move, or whatever, $1 trillion. Now, if you're talking more than that, and you're talking about the gold being gone, it's become the whole new program, a whole question in my mind. A guy that's really seen it all, seen people get blown away for doing these inquiries. I've had a couple times when there's been attempts on my life, two times specifically. The bottom line being, what in the world, where would that money go? That was the big question. You know, and money was going into huge covert operations, black money, black operations, that are all top secret. And we have to remember, a lot of people don't realize this, most all of the senators and congressmen do not have clearances for secret or top secret clearance to look at where the money goes for a black operation. They have to sign off on it. they have to sign off on. They look at something that's like $15.6 million or $2 billion, all right, or $20 billion. And they sign off on this money, these expenditures, but they're not clear to really know. Now, the higher-level senators and congressmen that get into the committees for intelligence and things of that sort, they're made privy to some of it. But there literally are top-secret categories, and this surprises people, too. Surprised me at first when I heard this, but then and found out about it and saw it, but then I understood the point. But there are four or five, or possibly even more, levels of secrecy above the president's office. So, again, you get to the thing where a president not, when he comes forward and says, hey, they didn't tell me about any of the flying saucer stuff, all right? Most of them are telling the truth. You know, everybody thinks, oh, they got to know. The presidents are not made privy to upper-level black operation secret funding, particularly when it involves weapons and things of that sort, that may have been started 2 years ago and may not even be completed for another 4 years or 5 years. So this president, for his four-year term, has no reason to really know about it. And if you stop and think, if government was legal and honest, which we don't have much of that any longer, that really makes sense. You don't want to tell somebody something that's just going to be an executive for the presidency for a period of time when, in fact, it may go past even his family's lifetime, the development of secret weapons. President Truman did not know until about a month or so after he had become president. He did not know that we were working on the atomic bomb, and he was vice president at that time, and never knew. And when, I guess it was Roosevelt passed away, Truman became president and was not made privy to the atomic bomb until he had been sworn in as president for a couple of weeks, at least, if not more. So anyhow, just an interesting story. The bottom line is, the secrecy thing is it eats us up. They can move money from one place to another. You never would know how much, when, where, or what it was for. But what I discovered, and I had already known about some of it in back in the 90s, but what I realized was all around the same period of time, a lot of the things had changed in 1983 when Reagan and Bush were president and vice president. 1983, they put up this telescope that was an extraordinary infrared scope that could see things that were not having their own illumination of any sort, way out in the farther reaches of space. And when they put that out, apparently the word came back to the White House that, uh-oh, we have a serious problem. And that is that the Planet X, that people had talked about for so long, you know, back and forth in arguments between astronomers and scientists and all the rest of that. And I don't want to go into all of it, but it's awful lot of people have spent their entire lifetime pursuing and looking and following and chasing the Planet X. And, of course, it's written in, going back to the Bible and other scriptures, it is literally written and described as coming in every once in a while, you know, on unknown periods of time exactly, but coming in, and the amount of literary description of this thing, documentation of this thing coming in and causing disruption on the globe, Earth, and causing Noah's floods and all the other outrageous events, and then it would pass and go back out again, that was profuse, the amount of documentation on that. But nobody had, in fact, seen it, located it, or what they thought was it anyhow. So once they put out this telescope, apparently the word came back that it was real, it was, and it was headed back in. in a short period of time, not in 100 years, but it would be sooner than that, and that we had to start worrying about it. Now, they don't tell us anything that is discovered out in outer space that is of any unusual importance, because it was decided right around 1961 during Kennedy's administration that basically if they ran in face to face with an entire army of aliens, that they were not going to tell anybody about it. Because
you're talking about the Brookings Report, aren't you?
Well, yes, right. The Brookings Report, which was a request. Actually, it was done by Kennedy, and he said when he realized we were starting to go out in outer space, so to speak, there were going to be discoveries. Of course, there already were discoveries, but I think the point was if all of a sudden they went out and, like I said, was confronted with five planets that are already occupied or something like that, do they dare tell the public? And in the Brookings Report, which was a private enterprise assigned to analyze this sociological problem, what do we tell the people if we find these things? It had been decided way back in the 60s, like I say, that they would not tell the people if, you know, they just wouldn't tell them unless they try to figure out some way to do it, but that they would maintain a lid on any kind of disruptive or upsetting information coming from outer space. So that's been a regular, actually in black and white, a manner by which they, all the White Houses have handled that problem. Now, in my case, I knew that things had changed. I was aware of an awful, because in 1985, a couple of years after that discovery, was when I became a federal witness and got involved with, as a matter of fact, I was even the candidate for Congress in 1990 in Florida, running against a corrupted congressman down there. Don't want to get into that, but that was how high I got up. I was just, I had people from the Pentagon, people from the CIA, people from all these high-level Senate and Congress and what have you. I testified before Senate Intelligence Committee at one time, et cetera, et cetera. The bottom line is I had my fingers in the pie close enough to get really good information. So back in the 90s, this 3 years ago is when we're talking about my inquiry starting out on this Planet X. But back in the 90s, I had heard about and had seen pictures of underground facilities that were well underway and had been constructed in America. We're talking at this point in time over 100 of them. They are profuse. They're large enough, some of them, one's big enough to handle 10 or 15,000 people underground at one time. Several of them are a little smaller, but nonetheless, they are very, very elaborate. It's an entire highway system beneath the ground that links these facilities together. Now, I have, I'll mention this now because I want to put out an address too, important for the people that are friends that may not be computer savvy or don't want to put things or inquire on the computer. I'm going to give everyone my mailing address besides my computer program address. So if everyone wants, if you have an interest, you may want to contact me separately from computers. Grab a pencil and a paper, and I'll give that to you in a few minutes. But the point is, the underground facilities are extreme. And then, of course, I found out, and I got my hands on actual billings on the underground facilities that had been for the last 5 years to 10 years, filling up and being completely supplied with survival foods. Now, these underground facilities are all over the country. They also include not only the highways big enough for 18-wheelers to drive alongside of each other and the intersections crossing. They have railroad tracks that go down into them. They have mag levitation trains in a few of them for going several hundreds of miles that are travel at a speed of about the speed of sound, 400 to 500 miles an hour underground on mag-levitated train tracks. These are, by the way, you know, it's outrageous. We only have a few hundred miles of mag-levitated trains in the United States. China has 4,000 miles, I think it is, of above-ground mag-levitated trains. It makes us really way behind time, so to speak. But again, going back to 83, when the realization was in the seat of the presidency that it appeared that the Planet X was real and was going to be headed back in, and that, in fact, we have to do something to preserve our lives. And when I say our lives, they're talking about the limited few, the elitist at the very top of the ladder in the United States. Now, when I found out, and I like I say, I already was aware of limited numbers of these, but then I found out that these underground facilities were really big, really expanded, with so much of the dry foods going into it that retail operations for several years, going back 4 or 5 years, were not even able to get enough freeze-dried. Their orders were not even being filled, or they were being cut in half because the government had been taking 90% of everything that was being made and putting them down in these underground facilities. So all those dried foods and survival products were being grabbed up by government contracts. At the same time, we were witnessing, and I was aware back in back in the 90s, of this extraordinary militarization with weapons going into our police and the sheriff's department. Now, that's floated to the surface again recently, you know, with all of this social unrest between the police department and the black community and all the rest of that, and the complaints about these weapons that were being troop carriers and all the rest of the gas and actually there's hand grenade launchers, flamethrowers, water tanks, pressure water tanks coming in, armored troop carriers that are being used by the sheriffs and the police department. There's a reason for that, and it also fits into something that you mentioned very briefly here at the top of this program, Jade Helms. Now, here's the deal. Basically, what I discovered, and by the way, all of this is available to all of our friends out there. I've got it in a double-disc DVD. It's literally 4 hours. It's a library of information. It is the connecting the dots around the entire globe on what's been going on at the highest level of government, the preparation for the incoming of Nibiru. It's available. Anybody that's interested in it, you can go to my website, which is BobFletcherInvestigations.com. That's BobFletcherInvestigations.com. Or those of you who are, like I say, maybe not computer savvy or don't want to fool with it, you can drop me a note at Post Office Box 216. That's Box 216, Bayview, Idaho. At Bayview, Idaho, 83803. Contact me. I will send you a little list of the reports we have. But we do have this one, and it's titled Incoming, and it covers all aspects of the theft of funds, the transfer of money to build and create these underground facilities, and the fact, by the way, that it's not just the United States, but every nation, every major nation in the world, have been simultaneously creating their own underground survival locations. The Red Chinese, the Russians, and all of European nations, some of them working cooperatively together, to build and put together their own hideout undergrounds. In the DVD that I have available, I have motion pictures, films, I have footage, we have also plenty of stills, I have pictures in the Chinese locations, the Russian underground facilities, as well as several of the ones in the United States. In 2012, in the middle of all this, several nations of the world got together and they created what's called the Seed Vault. All right? And it is exactly what it sounds like. It is a single, actually there's three of them now. It's in Oslo, Norway, in that area, or excuse me, actually an island off of Norway. And it is an underground facility that has been mutually constructed. It's finished now. It is filled with billions of seeds. I don't know how many, but enough seeds of all the variety of growing plants on the surface of the earth so that they can be replanted after Nibiru passes by and floods and meteor showers start fires and destroys the surface of the earth for some unknown period of time. And it's called the Seed Vault. You can go on your own computer, look it up. I do have all of this in our DVDs that we have available now, have all of that along with everything else. I also got into the religious aspect of it. I wanted
to
know.
Let's hold that. We'll get into the religious aspect
and
come back. And I've been getting questions, too, from the listeners. They want us to cite that scripture. So we'll work on that over the break, folks. And when we come back in hour number two, we'll continue with Bob Fletcher. He's done a great job with the background. Now we're going to get into what it's all about and what the threat is. We'll see you back here in hour number two.
On Facebook, on the news, and in conversations with friends, we're bombarded every day with advice on how to be healthier, from gluten-free and non-GMO diets to how much exercise and sleep the body needs. But how much have you heard about alkalizing the body? AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops are a holistic and natural way to get your body's pH levels back in balance. Just a few drops in water will help your... And even the healthiest of diets can be complemented with your daily use of AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops. Who isn't looking for more vibrance, vigor, and energy? Now buy two bottles of AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops and get $10 off your order. Visit AlkaVision.com or call 800-518-7615. AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops are packed with a powerful combination of the most alkaline minerals and compounds. Open the door to greater health, vitality, and zest for life. Alkalize your body. Supercharge your health. Call 800-518-7615 or head to AlkaVision.com.